From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The 21st state has earned a reputation for being progressive, but that does not immunize us from the extremist activity that's been on the rise throughout the country.
A man pleaded guilty to committing a hate crime against a bakery in McHenry County for planning to host a drag show.
It was Springfield Police Chief Ken Scarlett's first time addressing the public since one of his officers was accused of making racist posts on social media. Officer Aaron Nichols resigned Tuesday morning.
Police in Peoria, Illinois are searching for an arsonist who torched a Planned Parenthood clinic days after the search, after the state rather, enacted new laws protecting abortion rights.
Those are all actual examples of hateful or extremist behavior in Illinois from the past 2 years. Racist propaganda and anti-Semitic incidents more than doubled last year in Illinois. That's according to a new report from the Anti-Defamation League that came out just this week. It's called Hate in the Prairie State. But stories of extremism in Illinois go beyond anti-Semitism and reverberate through many of the state's marginalized communities, from people who are LGBTQ to those looking to get reproductive health care, which can but does not always include abortions. To talk through what the report found, we're joined now by Ben Popp. He's an investigative researcher with the ADL's Center on Extremism. Ben, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
And listeners, we're going to be talking about this for just the next 15 minutes or so. So if you want to get in on our conversation, now is the time to call 800-222-9455. How have you seen hate and extremism perhaps manifest where you are? Do you feel safe? And what would you like to see in terms of community action or policy to address extremism? The number again, 800-222-9455. All right, Ben. We don't have to get too deep into the numbers. Numbers are never great radio, but I do want to put this in some context. So what are some of the general trends we're seeing when it comes to anti-Semitism, white supremacism, hate crimes, and so on?
Sure. So, in many ways, Illinois is unique in the types of extremist activity that we're seeing there, but also really fits neatly into many of the national trends that we've seen as well. I would say, first and foremost, at least from my perspective as a researcher, white supremacist propaganda greatly increased over the last year nationally, around 38% from 5,000 cases that we've tracked to 7,000. So 38% is already in itself a big leap, but particularly in Illinois, that number was actually a 111% increase. So, this is really reflecting the national trend of white supremacists engaging in hateful propaganda distributions.
What does that mean, hateful propaganda? Are we talking about social media posts or handing out pamphlets, or what are we talking about?
Sure. So in most cases, what we code as propaganda distribution is largely in the form of flyering. So many of the groups that we track that are active, in Illinois and nationally, largely participate in flyer distribution. So these normally come in the form of either anti-Semitic or racist flyers that are placed into baggies and then weighed down with something and then distributed onto people's lawns. That's really the most common thing that we see. Some of the other groups that we track engage in, like, stickerings, where they'll find public places where they can place propaganda stickers. In the more concerning cases, these will actually have QR codes or links that someone who might not necessarily know what they're encountering could follow and end up in online spaces where extremist ideologies are being shared.
And maybe it's difficult to categorize these, but is this an attempt at recruitment? Is it an attempt at intimidation? What is the purpose of this sort of activity?
I think that there's no one sort of overarching goal from propaganda distribution, but there are several benefits that extremists see in doing this. So you mentioned intimidation. I would say that that's probably the largest reason that they're doing this. These groups want to show communities that they are present, and they want to scare communities and They also want to normalize the rhetoric that they're sharing in a lot of this propaganda. These groups will also often engage in things called banner drops, where they'll go on overpasses and show banners with white supremacist rhetoric on it in very, you know, public-facing places. And that's, you know, much of the same thing. They want this to become a normal thing for, you know, different communities to encounter, where instead of being shocked by, you know, this white supremacist rhetoric, people unfortunately become desensitized. And, you know, particularly in places where this happens a lot, it's, another weekend of looking at, you know, white supremacist imagery and that sort of thing. So, you know, the more that they can kind of normalize their rhetoric, the more they think they can, you know, shift the political conversation in their direction. Yeah. So that's, you know, another unfortunate consequence of this.
Interesting. It can happen here, to borrow a phrase. Yes. So we've been talking a lot about propaganda, but the report, Hate in the Prairie State, actually looks at things all the way up to, say, bombing an abortion clinic. Can you talk about some of the other examples that you included or data points you included?
Sure. So the particular example that you brought up in January of 2023, a man threw a Molotov cocktail inside a Planned Parenthood center before fleeing the scene. So this particular attack caused an estimated $1 million worth of damage to the facility. It had to close for several months. And, you know, this impeded the clinic's ability to provide the community with needed healthcare resources. You know, extremism comes in all forms. We have, you know, violent extremists who are willing to engage in, you know, acts of terror and violence, but then, you know, all the way down to, as we were talking about, propaganda distribution. But these are all sort of in the same ecosystem. We can't look at these incidents, you know, in a sort of disconnected manner. They are all, they're all linked by ideology. So,
yeah, that's interesting, because I wanted to ask you about that, because I'm just going to strawman a listener out there who says, you know, it's one thing we're talking about, you know, this leafleting, it's hateful, it's terrible, but it is protected by the First Amendment, as opposed to something where, and I think the guy in that abortion clinic ultimately pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 10 years in prison for that.
Yep, that's correct.
Why is that important to make sure that people think of those as on a continuum?
I think because, you know, with the flyering, the more innocuous it seems, the more dangerous it is. Because, you know, as I said, these people are trying to normalize this rhetoric. They're trying to desensitize us to very extreme anti-Semitic imagery, in many cases, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, which, you know, many of these theories we've actually seen contribute to acts of violence, like the Tree of Life shooting in 2018, mm-hmm. or any number of other mass shootings. You know, the Buffalo one comes to mind as well. These were all sort of informed by the so-called Great Replacement conspiracy theory. And, you know, many of those theories are being shared in these flyers. So, you know, while the people distributing these may not be engaging in violence, the rhetoric that they're sharing definitely contributes to violence.
Heats up the water, so to speak, overall.
Exactly.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking with Ben Popp, who's an investigative researcher with the ADL's Center on Extremism. The ADL recently came out with a report, actually just this week. It's called Hate in the Prairie State, which looks at the increase in hate crimes and the distribution of racist propaganda and extremist activity here in Illinois. I mentioned the person who pleaded guilty to throwing that Molotov cocktail into the Planned Parenthood clinic was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Are other people facing consequences for some of these actions?
It largely, you know, depends. It's really a case by case basis. I mean, you know, one thing we've seen is after the January 6th insurrection, you know, many of the senior Proud Boys that were engaged in the insurrection in some way or another were recently sentenced. And, you know, some of those were the longest sentences handed down in relation to the insurrection. So, you know, certainly some extremists are facing consequences for their actions. But, you know, from my perspective, many of the more concerning extremist activity that we see is stuff that, you know, is largely remains within the bounds of the law and, you know, protected speech. And from that perspective, you know, when extremists are able to operate in the light, so to speak, you know, without any consequences because, you know, what they're doing isn't strictly illegal, I think that is also, you know, something that we need to continue to look at.
Yeah. So we got an email from a listener who didn't want their name used for safety reasons, but mentioning that they're aware, and we haven't independently verified this, so I'm not going to say the location, but school flyers where disenfranchised youth get these QR codes and they can sort of get support for things like how to make Molotov cocktails, you know, obtaining the tiki torches that the Proud Boys carry, you know, how to modify their vehicles for, you know, Unite the Right type rallies, flags, things like that. Is that the sort of thing, the example that you were documenting in this report?
I would say in some cases, nothing comes to mind recently that was, you know, sort of that extreme. I mean, we have seen, not necessarily in schools, but, you know, we have seen some extremists in online spaces sharing files for like 3D printing guns and that sort of thing. Obviously very concerning there, because those are then, you know, unregistered firearms. And, you know, there's also other things that they can print, like modifications where they can, you know, make a weapon fully automatic and that sort of thing. So, you know, there's those sorts of concerning things that we've seen. But then also really what is largely shared in things like QR codes and links are materials that are meant to, you know, further radicalize individuals. Things like Europa, The Last Battle, which is a sort of infamous white supremacist film that sort of, from its perspective, documents the Great Replacement and that sort of thing. So that's more of what we see rather than, you know, direct
instruction
tactics,
or tactics. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we're coming to the end of our time together. I do want to ask, these examples of extremism we've been talking about, I mean, these are in some ways microcosms of bigger struggles that some of our marginalized groups in our state and our country are facing right now. How do you see those communities responding to all of this? You know, keeping themselves safe, taking care of themselves.
Well, I think, you know, we work closely with a lot of, you know, secular community organizations as well as religious ones. You know, we've worked with places that have received nonprofit security grants and that sort of thing. So, you know, this is something that ADL is very tied into. And I will say that, you know, these communities are very obviously interested in their own safety. But I think we've also seen that, you know, communities that might seem disconnected in some way have really found a way to, you know, communicate across different communities. So we've seen, you know, members of the Jewish community come together with members of the Black community, particularly around incidents like the swatting incidents that we've seen, that sort of thing. So, you know, I think the more that we can work together, the safer we are from extremists.
Yeah. All right. Ben Popp is an investigative researcher with the ADL's Center on Extremism. The report is called Hate in the Prairie State. We'll have a link to it at our website, 21stshow.org. Ben, thank you for your work. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us today on the 21st Show.
Yes, thank you. Have a good one.
You as well. Coming up, we are going to be taking a turn into the environment. This is Climate Solutions Week here on NPR stations across the country. It's part of a coordinated national effort to focus on some of the issues related to our environment and specifically as it relates to climate change. And we're going to be talking about plastics for the rest of our show today. They are everywhere in our society, including in our water. There are people working to try and address that, including Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. Plus, there's a new exhibit on water and plastics at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago. We're going to take a dive into both of those things when we return. If you want to get in touch, let us know what you think about what we've been talking about. The way to do that is by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121 or email us, talk@21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.